Hello, everybody, and welcome to our INE office hours call for the month of October 2020. So we're here to answer your questions regarding whatever it is you have questions about. So it could be that you have particular client case you're working on and you have questions about them, about their labs, about their history, about what the next steps are. It could be that you have some questions about the content in the program, mostly NEPT or IRSPT, whichever program you're in. And then finally, if you have anything about your business, about marketing, about a new program that you want to create, about enrolling clients, anything at all that's related to what it takes for you to be an effective practitioner. So go ahead and raise your hand. And the way you raise your hand, if you have a question, is you go to where it says participants at the bottom. And then there's a little bar down at the bottom and there's a hand thing and you can just put your hand up or you can just wave to me. And I will answer you. But if we get busy and there's more than what fits on my screen, then I won't see it. So I see Maria has her hand up. That's the easiest. And so I'm going to ask Maria to unmute. Hi. There she is.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Long time no see.
Long time no see.
Okay. So, my question is, you know, I'm working with that, potentially going to be working with that doctor. And we're working on putting this program together. And you know some about it, so I don't have to give back.
Yeah.
The concerns that I have is, and I don't know how to manage this, just because I've never been in this situation, is we're having calls, twice a week now to put this program together. And there's a lot of time involved. There's absolutely no agreement in writing. There's nothing. And, I have a skepticism over here how much time I'm going to continue to invest.
And have her decide she doesn't want to do it.
And share, we decided that we're going to do a pilot.
So have you verbally talked about finances? Like, how is she going to compensate you?
So she, I told her that I was here to support her because she doesn't have much experience on putting programs together, right?
Right.
Never worked with a coach. She's been just being a doctor, which is great, and her kind of layers of programs at the bottom, she had stipulated some amounts, which, like whatever the cost of the program that she had intended to charge. And she says, oh, Maria gets this and I get this.
Okay. Percentage wise on. So like if you're putting together this program with her and you're going to be doing it, what is she going to give you a percentage, like 20% of what she gets?
And in this case is not less than 50% because I was very clear that it's about time, my time invested versus in her time invested. So in certain parts of it, it doesn't make any sense to me financially, because I just start putting hours, she says, oh, this is her idea. I says, oh, this many hours and this and that and that. And I said, okay, let me allocate the hours on this and that, divide my dollar per hours. And I'm like, I told her, before we decide to go to pilot, so we're going to have to rearrange this. This is not making sense financially for me, because if you just see my hours invested, and so
right. You can't be working for $10 an hour.
Yeah, it's a little bit more than that, but it's, but then I'm kind of making her aware that it takes quite a bit more time to put this in to maintain the program. So, okay. And now there is Facebook. Who is going to maintain? Who is going to answer? Who's going to go into there? Are going to hire anybody? And then there is Q&A from people, because people are going to have questions. So we're going to email. Who is going to do this? And then there is the presentations, so, okay, we're going to meet once a month with this group. And then there is nutrition. There is exercise. There's all those things. We're going to talk about it. And I'm okay.
You're going to do some of that and she's going to do some of it. And she's got the equipment that she wants to recap her investment in. So Yeah. So I think what you need to do is have a conversation before it gets too far along and say, hey, let's make sure it's a win-win for both of us. And the first pilot, you know, it may not be. And it's just like in your own business, if you're going to go partner with somebody the first time around, you may not make back your time. You may make $5 or $10 an hour, but with the idea that now we have this program, we know who the audience is, and that it can be making, you know, $100,000 every time you run the program, which would be nice if you get 50% of that, right? So you need to get that agreement and then have something drafted and have it, you know, assigned.
How does it go about this time of preparation, you know?
Right. Well, that's something you can do, that if we don't follow through with this, right, that's all part of building a program. And that's where the 50% thing comes in. And that's a very high percentage. So that's great if you get her to agree to that. But then it's if for some reason she decides to back out and not run the program, that you want to be compensated for your time at this rate for all the time you've been spending in doing.
Okay.
Right. Because if you spend all this time, you give her all these ideas, and then she says, I don't want to do this. And then she just decides to go off and do it on her own. And I don't think she's like that, but that's the risk you always run with this kind of thing, that they just decide not to do it. And then 2 years later, they decide to do it and they don't involve you, but you've given all your time and ideas. So that, you know, I'm going to waive the fee for me, you know, doing these meetings and us doing it out there, as long as I'm getting this percentage, right? And you're both having risks. So you both have skin in the game, and right, you both want to make it successful, but that she also has skin in the game if she's, you know, going through and you're mapping this out and she decides she doesn't want to do it, that then she has to go back and pay you for your time, that you're going to keep track of the time in the meetings and that you do that.
How about I have a feeling that, you know, building the presentations, putting the content together, even forms, I have a feeling this is going to follow me. It's just...
Which is fine if she's going to give you 50%, because that's super generous.
Okay.
Right? But if she's giving you 10%, then you have to renegotiate what you're going to put into this.
Yeah. And... So
she's going to incur the cost, I would assume, of creating a membership site, paying the fees for that, any tech costs, or how are you going to do that? So I think you guys need to sit down and work this out. Here's some of the costs I think are involved. And here's the deal. We're going to do this. We've agreed. We're going to do this. Where our target date is this. But if you decide that you don't want to do this after all, then I want to be compensated for my time, for all the time I'm helping you to map this out and plan it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, one thing, if she's going to say, hey, I'd love to do this program, this is what I'm going to do, I'd love to have you come in as the health coach doing this, and then you can, you know, get paid your fees for that. But if you're helping her with the marketing plan and the development and the laying it out, then, you know, she's got to have skin in the game too, because your skin in the game is all this time.
And to be totally honest, so far is just, I'm leading all the meetings and I'm giving her, sharing the experience that I collected personally and from working with people like you, for example, how to put this stuff together and give her ideas. She's just making notes and say, yeah, that's great. That's what she's saying, yes or no. And for the most
right now, you're acting as a marketing program development consultant, right?
That's what I'm playing right now. But then once we're getting that finalized, which we're getting close to the big idea, then we're going to go into the minutia of, okay, what is the content? You know, what are we going to do, this and that and that?
Right.
And, you know, yes, I do see that, for example, she is sharing 50%, although I'm not be doing this Barry Contouring stuff. She's doing that, right? So that's her time. And she's sharing that percentage, I guess, with me, because she's putting a dollar amount. And I would like to know what this dollar amount is coming from, I guess, you know.
But yeah, and she's paying for the equipment that she's using as the core of the program, right? She pays a lot of money for that. So I think if you've negotiated 50% that of the net, you got to talk net or gross. Is it 50% of the gross revenue? Like if I run a program and I sell, you know, 100 people into $1,000 program and there's $1,000, that's gross. Net is how much time did I have to pay people, you know, tech team, et cetera, how much for the website and all that. And maybe I made 50,000 on it or 60,000, right? So that's where you have to look at net versus gross.
Yeah, I think right now is, you know, is gross, not net.
Okay, and then she has the client base, right? So she has her patient base. And then, you know, of course, you can sell this out bigger and grow her patient base, but she's already got that base that she's invested a lot in building over the years, and they trust her and all that. So selling to a warm or hot audience is going to be much easier than sending Facebook traffic to this new program and hoping, you know, for the best, right?
Yeah.
So she's got that asset. She's got the asset of the list, and she's got the asset of the equipment. And then your asset that you're bringing to the table is knowledge of how to put together a program. And then you're going to be doing the health coaching part and the fitness part, you know, and all that. So I think just get it in writing.
Yeah. Okay.
Because right now you're acting as a consultant, which she would have to pay a lot of money to.
Yeah.
Right? So you put a value on that. You put a value on your time, an hourly value on your time. You're keeping track of the hours you're putting in. And you say, you know, the 50% is whatever. If she agrees to that, that's great. I think it's awesome. I would never agree to that. I never agree to give somebody 50% of a gross program revenue ever for anything.
Right. Right.
So if you get that, that's awesome. But also if she just decides to pull the plug on the whole thing, then you want to be compensated for the time. And you just say, you know, right? Because then she has this plan. She has all this idea that she could go ahead and do later.
That's so. Right. And I think that will come also, you know, on the content, you know, so she's going to have my content. And I'm like, okay, yes.
Right. You need to get it in writing and then run it by, you know, somebody that you have anybody that you know that's an attorney that could look it over.
I know attorneys, but not necessarily that, you know, would be working with that. I guess can always find somebody.
Yeah. Partnerships are tough, you know? So, but it can be very lucrative. I know lots of people who have amazing partnerships. I don't know the behind the scenes of how they do the financials, but it could be great. I've done some partnerships. So Kevin Gianni reached out to me at one point because I want to do this hormone class and I want it to be 3 classes and blah. Would you create the content? I'll sell it to my list. You create the content. I'll give you 35% of what comes out. I'm like, sure. So that was easy, right? He gave me 35% of whatever he sold. That was easy, right? Because I created the easy part for me is creating content. It's not for him. It wasn't for somebody else, but for me, that's easy. But he gave me 35%. And we've done similarly when we brought people in to do content, but he had the marketing. He had the big expense. He had the asset of the list and he had to pay for, you know, creating the content on the site and the membership area and all that. So.
Yeah. Right now I told her there's going to be costs and this pilot, you know, there's, you know, giving her options of stuff, seems like she wants to keep it small. And it says, look, once you grow into a bigger base, you cannot manage this with hands and emails, simple like that. You need a system.
You guys should look at Groove Funnels right now because they're offering a real big special. And it's basically going to be the goal. And I got in at the early stages. I haven't started using it yet, but it basically, Steph and Allison have started to use some of the features of it, but it basically is like ClickFunnels, Infusionsoft, webinar, membership platform, all of that in one thing. And they're right now offering a, you know, pay one time and you have it for lifetime. When I did it, it was $500 and I did it. And I'm like, I don't care if I lose the $500, no big deal. But what I stand to gain is 1200 bucks a month that I don't have to pay to all these services that I'm paying right now. Right. So I did it. And I know Allie did it. She could probably, you know, chat with you offline about that. And Steph is doing it and she's building funnels. She's not ready to do the full thing and move it over, but she's definitely building some. And she said, so easy to build pages there. So.
Do you spell that?
Groove, G-R-O-O-V-E, Groove Cart.
Okay.
Right. So instead of paying like 100 bucks a month to something like ActiveCampaign or, you know, $500 a month to Infusionsoft, you're paying a flat fee and you get it for forever, basically.
Groove Cart. Okay.
Yeah. So look at that. Anyway, I'll move on to other questions. And
you appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome. It looks like Linda has her hand up.
Yes. Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here. I've missed so glad you're here. So I have a program for people with chronic health, autoimmune, whatever. I'm an FDN, and I'm in your course. And I just wanted to ask you, so the way I have it set up right now is 12 weeks where we start with an elimination diet, just, you know, there, and then we move into liver and then into stress. And then like adrenal support, and I use CellCore. Are you familiar with CellCore Biosciences?
I've heard of them. Yep. I haven't used them, but yeah.
Okay. So the protocol is sort of models that it's, multi-phase, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes into like mitochondria, giving them energy, the balancing mm-hmm. immune system, and then the gut, the liver drainage pathways. Right. And that may take 10 months. So my program is 12 weeks of content, but I may work with someone for 10 months. Here's my question. Oh, and also included initially is a gut Zoomers test, and I'll do a stool test. And I've done GI map, I've done microbiome, and I've done the gut Zoomers. So I would love your input on which one you think is the best.
Yeah.
And then, okay, so that's like the basic, you know, CellCore has parasites, you know, they have great binders. They also, their last phase addresses Epstein-Barr and Lyme, but I just want to know what, like when we get to the end of that, what makes sense to do next, like, or even maybe not the end, maybe it should be sooner than that, whether it's an organic acids test or a nutrient.
Okay.
Deficiency, you know, like, cause that what I include is those two basic ones in the cost.
Yeah. Cause you figure everybody needs that. And then
yeah, the place to start. I mean, that's what I think. If you think that's not the right slice at it, but I think it like foundationally, let's get your gut and your liver pathways, you know, drainage pathways, and then see where you fall.
Yeah.
My thinking.
Yeah. So is this a one-on-one program or is there a group and then one-on-one?
It's like a hybrid. Like I have the 12 modules all laid out. I've been actually selling it for over a year mm-hmm. and I've put several people through. And so that's the basics. But then of course, when their labs come back, now I have specific information and I have weekly office hour calls. And then every 4 weeks, a one-on-one call with them. So it's kind of like mm-hmm. a hybrid.
And how much are you charging for this?
$6,000.
Great. Awesome. And how are you selling it?
So I have a Facebook group with a couple of thousand people in it, and I have a funnel with a webinar. My ads have been off since July because they got expensive and I wasn't converting. Mm-hmm. So I stopped the ad spend. So I'm just doing a lot of organic on Instagram and Facebook. Mm-hmm. And I'm about to do a 5-day workshop starting on Monday, 1 hour a day for 5 days. Kind of like you do. I'm just watching what other people like you do. So it's going to be 5 days for an hour each. I'm going to sell it for like $97. And it's going to be day one, gut health, why it's important, what you need to know. So hopefully by the end of it, they're like, oh, wow, that's.
Oh, I need more. No, not hopefully by the end. So this is where it comes in, like the deliberateness comes in, right?
Okay.
So you don't want to just hope by the end that they see it. You want have to be always pointing it out. So how are you, do you have anybody in it yet?
No, I didn't even really talk about it. I'm going to start tonight. I'm going to do a Facebook Live. I have a VA who's been saying, you know, she's like, we almost have the sales page done, you know, whatever. So I was sort of waiting so that to talk about it, but it's going to start.
Okay. So I want to give you a couple of ideas for that. And then I'll get back to the more technical ideas. But in terms of that, what I found the most effective is a 5-day free training with a VIP upgrade. So we're doing that right now. It's free to do our 5-day wow challenge. But okay. Then if you want to get, you know, some of the more behind the scenes and all recordings and handouts and all that, you pay, we're only charging $47.
Okay. I'm open to changing the price too. The VA actually is the one who said that's probably $97. And I was like,
okay. It is, you know, it's easy to sell to $97 if you have an audience and you can get a webinar and then you sell it and you, they go, wow, I want that. Right. But how, you have to get enough people to the webinar, right? If you get 20 people to a webinar, you're going to sell maybe 5 or 10 of them at the most, if you're really good at sales. Right. So it's easier to sell free with the upgrade. Right.
Okay.
So, so last year I did my first challenges last year. I did a 5-day keto, healthy keto. So for 5 days every day, they got a workbook, they got a thing. And if they wanted the recordings, they paid $27. And at the end of it, I offered it a webinar, which then didn't leave it to chance, right? It's like, you learned this, you learned this, you learned this. And what you really need to move forward is to customize it this way. Labs are important. I offered a $1,000 program, $1,500 program at the end of that. And I got 62 people to join it. That's nice. Right? That's really nice. But I didn't leave it to chance that they were going to, they're going to think, oh, I need more. We seeded throughout. So think of ways that as you're presenting this content that you're seeding, oh, it's great. And here's some great general stuff that you can do to support your gut. Here's some foods that hurt your gut. Here's some foods that harm your gut. Here's some foods that help heal leaky gut. The ideal is to get a gut test done and we can actually customize it to you. But these are great ways to get started, right? Oh, we're going to talk about liver, blah, blah, blah. The ideal would be, and then you know, and when I work with clients one-on-one, for clients in my XYZ program, that they get access to.
Got it. Yep.
You see what I mean? Yep. So, yeah. I mean, your program sounds like it's a lot of support with weekly office hours as a group, with the one-on-ones once a month, and with all the testing. And it's awesome, right? So.
And the cell core. It includes the cell core.
The supplements as well. Okay. Do you ever get people, this is why I've never included supplements in a program. Do you ever get people like, I already have my own supplements, or it's hard for me to get that, or I'm very sensitive and I'm afraid that I'm going to, you know, not tolerate those supplements. What happens?
Yes, I have. That's absolutely has happened. I'm on practitioner calls with CellCore every week. So they have a great, like, sensitive dosing and how to titrate mm-hmm. people down and move them up. So I try, mm-hmm. you know, I have that conversation. If somebody's really adamant, I'm like, great, you can do this without the supplements. Food will take you so far. Mm-hmm. I think that these, and they're not really supplements like vitamin B and vitamin D. They're like, you know, broccoli sprouts and mimosa pudica seed.
Okay. So they're real food as opposed to synthetic type stuff.
Exactly. They're organic botanicals that are designed to mm-hmm. work synergistically to support these phases that we're taking your body through.
Nice. Okay, so let's go back to some of your questions. So it's a 12-week, you start with an elimination diet, then you go into liver, stress, adrenals. There's education already done, I'm assuming, so it's just drip fed out to them once
exactly.
a week?
Exactly, I have all the modules built. I have videos at each module, like why great. This is important, blah, blah, blah.
Great, and so everybody gets the gut, you said they get the gut zoomer, and then they get a stool test, which is either a GI map or a gut, right? No, they get a stool test, which is either GI map, gut zoomer, and I missed what the other one was.
The Biome FX from Microbiome.
Okay.
I like their report. It's very thorough. And I did, do you know Microbiome?
I know them, but I haven't used any of their tests. My typical is Genova or Doctor's Data for a stool test is what I don't like GI map quite. GI map is,
okay.
That's not Genova, is it? Wait.
No, it's Diagnostic Solutions.
I just don't like their test. This blah, 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 E17. I find that I like the GI map from the whatever it's called, GI effects from Genova or the Doctor's Data. And maybe it's just because I'm used to it, but I just like those better. Anyway.
The reason I did microbiome was that I watched a YouTube thing and they talked about their technology and that their technology can find whole genetic sequencing of bacteria where most other technology only sees SNPs and then assumes and tries to put the SNPs together, but theirs actually sees entire strains in a different way.
But I don't know clinically, maybe I just haven't done enough of them. What do you do with that clinically? If there's some weird ass bacteria that I've never heard of and they've got, you know, blah, blah, blah times 10 to the E8 compared to, you know, I don't feel as empowered with my next steps from that test. And maybe I just need to do it more and study it more. But I don't know. Like, whereas if I look at, say, doctor's data is what I've been doing forever. I love that they give me, here's your normal flora. Here's what they should be. And I'm looking and going, wow, they have so little bifidobacter compared to lacto. And they have some SIBO symptoms. And this may be the problem. I can see it better, right? Because I know what the normal stuff is. And then they show, the other stuff they show is commensals. And I know, wow, they've got some hemolytic strep and that's growing as a commensal. But does that mean I have to put them on a GI killing protocol? Or do I just need to balance out their, you know, and I can actually make decisions like, oh, they have really great, all their normal flora looks great, but they've got some commensals. Maybe we just need to kill those commensals. Or their normal flora looks really bad. And let's just do a round of balancing the normal flora and see if they go away, because it's, you know, a lot of people have really bad effects. I'm sure you've experienced that. A lot of people have really bad die-off effects when you start to get into, and then you have to get into biofilms and, you know, there's a lot to do, but if anybody has something in their pathogens, then we want to address it and we want to address all of it. So I just like the format of the report, and maybe it's because I've been doing it for 25 years. So, you know,
I've never used them. I hope as an FDN, I have credentials to order that. I think
I do. Yeah. And I'm not sure I'm surprised that you have it as GI MAP, because I've tried to get it and they weren't open. Maybe it was 2 years ago. They weren't open to letting our students.
No, I have to do it through FDN. They have a medical director program.
So oh, you
I,
are, right.
I pay a fee to FDN and FDN orders it through their doctor.
Here we go. I don't charge a fee, but I got to start charging a fee. Yeah, that's how everybody in our program, you know, like any PT program. Which program are you in, by the way? Are you in?
I have to look and see. I think it's your gut one. It's part of the new nutritional endocrinology.
Okay. So the CMDS, right. The gut one. Yeah. Yeah. So we offer the ability for any PT students anyway, to get whatever tests we have available.
It's $40, but then you also get a consult at the end as part of it. When your labs come back, you automatically consult with the FDN medical.
That's nice. So you pay $40 per test. And then you get to consult with them. That's very good. Yeah. Yeah. It's a good idea.
So, okay. But I'll check out Doctor's Data as an option.
Doctor's Data just added a PCR. So you get the genetic as well. And then the GI map, and maybe the GI map is bad. Maybe I just need to look into it more,
No, okay. So the PCR, so that kind of speaks to the other part of my question, which was genetic testing versus, or in addition to organic acids testing, like what makes the most sense to add in?
Yeah, and you know, it's hard. That's okay. It's hard to say it's very customizable to the person, right? So if somebody's dealing with stuff and you deal with their gut, I usually don't do a gut test first personally. I look at their blood labs. I look to see what's out of balance. If we do a program where we just include four labs, then it's usually, it's a gut test. It's the oat test, organic acid test. It's the Dutch test. And then fatty acids, blood spot fatty acids, which is the most reasonable, because those things give me a good basis of, you know, how are their hormones? How are their adrenals? How's their gut? How's their neurochemistry? You know, because the organic acid gives that. And how are their mitochondria? Because that's what the organic acid gives as well. So if you wanted to have a package that included those four, and then we have another package that only includes two of the four, right? They get the Dutch and the blood spot, and then we go into the stool and the organic acid.
So you don't do food testing, food like a Zoomers?
I have to look at the Zoomers. And I started doing gut tests back 30 years ago when I first got out in practice. And I was like all excited, and I'd run these tests, and I just didn't find that there was any consistency between them. So the gut Zoomers are supposed to be more consistent. So I have to look at those in more detail, but I got so turned off by that. I just do elimination diets with people. And then when I do a food testing, it's do elimination, elimination, elimination. This person's eliminated everything and we're still, there's something there. You know, maybe they have a broccoli allergy, right? So that's when I would run one of those.
That's what we see. That's what I've seen anyway, especially with chronic conditions. They've become so sensitive because their gut's
exactly.
So that this, you know, I could say an elimination diet and blueberries are good and broccoli is good, but actually we see that they're very, you know, responsive to those foods. So it helps.
Well, because they eat them a lot. And yeah. So really what I look at is your primary thing with these folks is to get them to heal their leaky gut, right? Not just avoid foods. And you've been taught that and sure Reed's goes through that in the program. But the thing is that if you don't heal the gut, like a lot of doctors out there, they're like, oh, run a food sensitivity, take people off all these foods. And then, you know, in 3 months, introduce them back. And then you like, or do the test again. And then those foods are fine. But 50 other foods that they've been eating are because they didn't address the gut. So you must address the gut. A lot of times I just address the gut first, because I know based on symptoms that these people have food sensitivity. So they're already telling me I'm sensitive to this, this, and the other.
Yeah, that's where we start. The first 4 weeks is all gut protocol.
It's all gut stuff, right? So you're healing the gut. So if you're going to do a test for food sensitivities, you wait until after you do your gut your gut healing.
Okay.
Don't do it at the beginning because you're wasting their money if you do it at the beginning.
Okay.
Right. So you see what's there, what are they still reacting to after you've plugged the holes?
But let me ask you this. If you put them on an elimination diet and they're eating really healthy, or a lot of times people come back or start with me and they're like, I've been, you know, they're pretty savvy now with functional medicine to a degree anyway. And then, you know, and they're doing an elimination diet that has these healthy foods, and they're responsive to it, isn't it going to be harder to heal their gut because you're keeping like an inflammatory response there by having them eat foods that they are sensitive to?
Yeah. So yeah, it's certainly possible, but my experience has been, I take away all the inflammatory foods. I put them on anti-inflammatory foods, right? I take away the things that are known allergens, right? I take away the top six: gluten, dairy, corn, soy, eggs, peanuts. I ask them questions to see if there's other stuff. And then we do stuff to heal the gut while they're eliminating, right? And yeah, it's possible that they're responsive to blueberries. We also look at blood sugar as well. So a lot of them are not doing blueberries anymore because their blood sugar goes up with it, but that's another story.
Well, I just picked that as a healthy food, but
yeah, salmon
come back for a lot of people. Salmon is not good. And, you know, we're using that as a healthy thing.
Yeah. So I generally, when I was doing it on myself, I always do tests on myself and I'd run tests on myself and I go, okay, what is this test showing? This test is showing that I'm sensitive to salmon and I haven't eaten it in 20 years. This test is showing that I'm not sensitive to dairy. And if I even sneeze at dairy, I'm going to get sick, you know? So and my husband, who's deathly allergic to soybeans, like really badly allergic to soybeans, even soy flour in the air will cause his throat to close up. He would show up on those tests as he's fine with soybeans. So, you know, I don't know if it's because you've avoided them for a long time. That's the other issue with some of the blood food sensitivity tests that I look at, is that in order for it to show up positive, if the person's been avoiding it for a while, they have to eat it again. And people get a false sense of security when they've been off of gluten and dairy for 2 years. And then you run this test and it says gluten and dairy are fine. They go back and eat it again. What they don't realize is that those antibodies are still there. I personally, my favorite way to test when I do test antibodies, food antigens, is with a stool test. And there's only one company I know of that does it, called Entero Lab, Entero Lab.
Okay.
And they will test it, because what's happening, they're testing IgAs. IgAs are like those little, you know, guards that are sitting around waiting. Right? IgGs are in the blood and they're not going to be there after a while. They'll be there when there's an exposure. And then when there's no exposure, they go back away. But as soon as they're exposed again, those IgAs get activated. So the only way to really see it is to expose a person and they go, and I'm personally not of the bent that I'm not putting anybody back on gluten and dairy if they've been away from them for a while, because I think it's dangerous to put them in that state where they can flare up an autoimmune condition. So I love that test. And they used to do just gluten, but they do gluten, dairy. They have about a dozen or 14 of the most common foods. They don't do everything, but they do a lot of the common foods.
Okay. So just to finish then, the top four, if you were going to do labs, would be an oat, a Dutch, fatty acid, blood spot. Who does that? Do you know that?
Genova does that.
Genova. Okay.
Yeah. And the order would depend, if I'm working with somebody individually, the order depends on the person. So we have a year-long program. People come in for 12 months and at a different levels, they get different batteries of tests. And I always tell them, don't just go and get your kits and run everything right away, because I want to run them in an order that makes sense, you know, and depending on their history. And so that's how I determine it.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And going back to genetics, I love doing genetics. Genetics to me is this incredible way to get people to actually do what you're going to tell them to do anyway, but they see it, right? And the same thing with labs. You know, I've gotten to the point of doing this for so long that most of the time I don't need the labs. You know, I can just get it, but they don't believe it until they see it on paper.
Yeah, right? It's helpful for them to see it.
So I like to take people in, especially, you know, a lot of our people are very savvy, right? They're listening to summits. They've learned all this stuff. They've already made a lot of changes. But if I get somebody off the streets who's just eating crap, and I'm like, I'm not testing them at all. I'm not doing any tests on this person. I'm going to clean up their diet first, right? Let's get your diet cleaned up for a couple of months and then we'll run tests, because it's a waste of their money. Unless they're not willing to change their diet, unless they see it on paper, then you just, you know, run all the tests and go, see, I told you, but they won't listen. Some of them won't, right?
Got it, right.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And in your course, do you have, like, I know, I actually watched your autoimmune thing last night, your webinar that you did, and
right.
you showed some great tools, some great, like, correlating tools. Is that part of the course handouts?
Yeah, it's part of that. And then we have a lot of that stuff, which is in the done for you section that you can just actually use as is, or take a Word copy of it and edit it and make it your own. You just have to give me credit at the bottom. But yeah, we have a lot of that stuff, a lot of done for you stuff, and a lot of correlation and charts and all that kind of stuff. Yep.
Okay, yeah. Great. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for your time.
You're so welcome. And as far as what's at the end, I mean, so I just want to answer one last thing, because I think everybody can benefit from this. What I always include when I'm creating a program is they get their initial evaluation and the blah, 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 and they get certain follow-ups. They always get what's next reevaluation at the end. So that's where you make their offer as to what you want to move them into next. All right. And then if it's a group program, you build that into some of the content, right? And so when I've done like my sweet spot or whatever, I'll have them fill out some forms at the end of that. That's just a group program, no one-on-ones. But at the end, I have them fill out these forms and they go, whoa, I got all this other stuff. It's not just my blood sugar. I have all this other stuff. And then we'll explain to them what their next steps are. And a lot of those people then step into our year-long program, right? So you give them reasons to get that there's something that's out of balance that they need to move forward on. So you look at, you know, a person and you've gone through the gut and the liver, but you're still thinking that this person needs more stuff. Their neurotransmitters are still out of balance, or something, SIBO might be going on and that's not going to heal up in 12 weeks. And, you know, for most people, so that you can actually tailor, you do that last session with them and you can actually tailor what you think they need next.
Okay, great. Make Thank sense. You.
Yeah, you're welcome. Welcome. Okay, who else had questions? Isabel, Julie, Stephanie, Carol, J.A., Jill, Allison, Marcy. Who else is here? And yours is hard to read. Kate. Oh, there's Kate. You're in the dark. It was hard to see you. So who has questions for me?
Hi, Dr. Rita Marie. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Isabel.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
Good. I am still on the trying to get my genetic thing figured out. I posted on Facebook a while ago that there's a discrepancy of a gene.
Yeah. Between your kids and you, and it didn't. Would you get in touch with?
No, not yet. I haven't. So I haven't had a chance to do that. I'm looking at that right now. And I just have a question on the, let me see, on the genetic genie report.
Yeah.
It says what's the difference between normal, and then it has also on the report, the end, it'll say variants not found in your file. What does that mean?
That that means that they can't read that gene in your thing. And ever since 23andMe got shut down by the FDA a few years ago, they cut down the number of genes, but all of these report programs had built in. So you'll see a lot of places where not found, right? Gene not found.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, because I ran some like a while ago with one of my kids, and it show up, and then not on my. So I was just wondering what this.
How long ago did you run it on your kids?
I think one of them was maybe 2 years ago, close to 2 years ago.
2 years ago, they should be there. I did mine 5 years ago, and I have the full. But then it's somewhere, you know, in that 2 to 3 year, no, because it's more than two, because when we did Shine 2 years ago and it was all on genetics, a lot of people had theirs run and I had given my sample reports out. And when they were looking at that, they were like, oh, why do I have all these not found? It's not, you know, can't be read. So it was over 2 years ago that they changed it, but I'm not sure exactly when.
Okay. Okay. So I was just wondering, what does it mean, the same thing, or what does that mean when variants not found?
Okay. So it didn't show the you know, the plus plus or minus minus. It just, yeah. It just said, yeah, in the text, not found. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So 2017, I think they still have it when I did the first.
Okay. Okay. So 17, right. And 18, they definitely didn't, because people that did it right before the event in 18 didn't have that. That's why I've been looking, and I actually got the results back from one of the tests I have to look at. And I want to look at the, Annette came on a couple of, like last week, and said that, what's his name? the strategy that they actually have their own now, Ben Lynch. Okay. Yeah. So I'm going to run it. You know, I spend a lot of money running tests on myself that I don't need to run, but I run them to verify and validate. So I want to see how that compares to mine, which was the old 23andMe, which had, you know, there were no null variants not found. It was a very complete test.
Okay. Yeah. Because when I did 2017 with my son, he had some. And then when I did it again with my and my daughter's, there's some says variants not found.
That they're not there. Yeah. So he got in before they changed it. The thing with those variations, I have found there are a few of the reports that there's an error that they report it backwards. So I look to see if that's the case at multiple different reports. And like there's an APOE4/4, and I told her about it, Christy Sutton, who wrote the book on the genetic path, her report, the genetic detoxification, there's a reporting problem with her APOE4/4 that's inconsistent with like Stratagene and Ben Lynch, that's Ben Lynch and metabolic healing. So you really just need to just kind of have that conversation with them and figure out which one is right. But if you only have two, it's hard to know which one's right. That's why I always have a third, like, so that you can, right? Okay. So you've run, which ones have you run? You've run the
genetic gene, and I have the one I did was with Great Plain a long time ago. So, oh no, it's all 23 and all the raw data is all from 23andMe.
Yeah, but the report. So if that's usually the problem is not in the data, it's in the report.
Okay, in the report. So I only did genetic genie. So I should run it on another.
Oh, that's all you ran it on? That's,
yeah, all three of us are on.
Oh, go run it on your genetic detoxification and metabolic healing.
Okay.
I actually, you know, when I've done it on myself, I've done genetic genie, genetic detoxification, metabolic healing, Stratagene, and MTHFR support. So I've done mine on five.
Okay, so the Stratagene, I think
very small. It's very small.
Yeah, it doesn't have.
You don't need. Yeah, you don't need to do that. I would say your best bet with the most complete will be the MTHFR support.
Okay.
The metabolic healing, and I really like genetic detoxification.
Okay.
So between, you know, just check it out and see and compare.
Okay. I was freaking out. I was like, okay, at least two of my kids are the same. So it's probably something.
So there's there's something wrong in the reporting. And you had them run at different times, or did you rerun the genetic genie on his now?
No, that was a while ago.
Right, but rerun the raw data now. Maybe they've changed it and corrected if there was a problem.
Okay, probably not, because I ran, mine was the most recent.
Right, but if yours, so it could be that yours was correct and your daughter's was correct, but your son's was incorrect. Right, because no, you're thinking it's
kids are the same. I'm different.
Right, okay. But they have a father.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So if your son has like, tell me the number. Were they both heterozygous, homozygous?
They were both normal.
They were both normal. What gene is this?
It's the CYP3A4-1B.
Okay. So they were both normal and you were?
I am heterozygous.
Hetero. So they could be normal and you hetero. That's okay. That's a possibility.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm homozygous.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm homo. So
they could still be, they can't be normal if you're homozygous. Yeah. So it is you that's wrong, right? There's no way they can be normal if you're homozygous unless, you know, you had a surrogate carrying them or you had a, you know, insemination, but you know, what's IVF with a donor egg, right?
There's so no, I'll run mine. So if mine came out,
yours came out homozygous and theirs came out normal. So, yeah. But yeah, so it's probably not the timing. It's probably not that, mm-hmm. Right? Okay. So I would contact Genetic Genie to start. And then I would run it on some others to see.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank yeah. You. Yeah. So, you know, when we're talking genes, right? If mama is homozygous, meaning she's got two reds, right? She's got two of these genes, she's going to pass one of those to her kids. So at best, her kids can be heterozygous, right? There's no way they can be normal at that point because, you know, mama, dad, you know. Yeah, that's the way it works. Unless it's that's not a sex link. Never mind. I was going to say sex link genes are a little different, but that's not. Okay, cool. Who else? Questions, comments, ways I can support you? Allie says, glad I came on. I've forgotten the degree of Dr. Rita Marie's brilliance. Thank you, dear. You're always good for my ego. Thank you. Yeah, I love doing the genetics, but you know, and I love tying it together. So whenever I do the genetics, I don't just do genetics in a vacuum. I like to look at genetics and go, oh, is this expressing, right? Because somebody has a genetic tendency to something doesn't mean it's expressing, right? So then I look at their various labs, like CYP3A4, I would be looking at the Dutch test because there's a couple of pathways that are controlled by that to see what comes out in the Dutch test to see if actually that's coming out. Yeah. Kate says, good to be here. I've been off the map due to fires. Good. I'm glad you're back. Yeah. Everybody that lives on the West Coast, you know, has had a horrible time of it and even not just the West Coast, you know, one of our people is in Idaho and she was having horrific and, you know, it's been hard. Yeah. Yeah. And then I was talking to a client today who lives in Washington. And she said, you know, she got out of her exercise routine was to go out and hike for 4 or 5 miles in this beautiful area where she lives. And then she couldn't do that. She got like, I said, yeah, you don't try to talk yourself into going out and hiking when the air is like that. That's not worthwhile. So she, you know, and then she traveled. And so, you know how easy it is to get off an exercise program. Well, I haven't done it for 2 weeks, 3 weeks because of the fires. And then you have to get yourself remotivated again because you've lost the fire about doing it. And that's what we have to keep in mind with our clients, right? That we have to be constantly there for them to help them to stay in the groove and stay motivated. And that's where I love to start with having people connect to their big why. So if they're like losing track of it, I'm always getting them back. Like, so what was that big why? What's your reason for being here and wanting to shift your health in the first place? Ah, has that changed? Is that still your reason? Great. Now that you're back, now that you could, I mean, I would also be, well, even with you guys on the West Coast, even in the houses, it was bad. So I was going to say you could do inside exercise, but even that could be not so good because, you know, you're huffing and puffing inside and still breathing in that the bad air, unless you have this like super Mongo air purifier that keeps you clean. But we have to help them to get back on the wagon. You know, I know for myself, I've had several injuries over the last few years, a sprained ankle or whatever, where I couldn't run, a broken arm, get me out. I wasn't allowed to run for 3 months because I had pins and they were afraid they were going to knock out, you know, and getting back into exercise after that is a challenge. And that's where we can help, you know, inspire and motivate people by bringing them back to why are they doing this? Why do they want to do it? Anybody else? Questions, comments, successes?
So Rita Marie, hi. I just wanted to know the difference on what the ERC training is. That is for coaches or for clients or
Great
both?
Good question. It's, well, the ERC, you're one of the coaches there. Anybody in any PT gets access to that whole, you know, database of all that training for you. So if you go there, I want all of us to be healthy first and foremost, right? So in any PT, big piece of it is, you know, here's your self-care. And we just offered that all the training that we do in ERC, we created it as a membership called the Empowered Self-Care Lab. And it's a $297 a month program, which gets access to everything I have. And we offered a founding price of it for $197 a month. And we've got 54 people who joined it. And most of them paid up for a whole year because they want that level of commitment. You guys get it in any PT. That's a bonus, right? Whether you're new in any PT or you've been there a while, that's a bonus. And, you know, it's basically a $6,000 bonus if you get it for 2 years. So take advantage of it, right? We all want to put ourselves first because the best way to support your clients is to support you. If you're like sick and overweight and, you know, low energy and you just can't get it together, how much motivation can you provide them if you're not even motivated yourself? So that's why we do that, right? And same thing, like if you're in the IRSPT, we give you access to Sweet Spot. If you're in Grand, CMDS, the gut repair, we give you access to Grand. So you can take care of that part of you as well. Because I think it's just as important as everything else. And today we've covered all bases here, right? So Maria had questions about marketing and why am I forgetting her name? Linda. That's what I was going to say. Linda had questions about, you know, combination of marketing, but also putting together a program, like what should be in that. And then you're having a question about the self-care, and the self-care is so critical. We all need to be doing the self-care every single day and be the inspiration and the beacon to them. Like so yesterday, I had this little short window. Well, I had an hour to begin with, but it got shrunk and I ended up, I'm going for a run anyway. I've got to get out there. It's beautiful. It's sunny. I'm not going to give this up. So I go back and I'm still in my running clothes now, exercise clothes, because I'm going to do it again. But I came back and I was like drenched, you know, red face, everything dripping. And I had like 2 minutes before I had to get on a call. So, you know, I don't have time to take a shower and put on makeup and comb my hair. So I just went on the call and I said, you know, guys, I'm just practicing what I preach. Fit in the exercise where you can. It doesn't matter. And, you know, you guys can see me looking like this. It's okay. But I got my exercise in, and that's what really matters.
Yeah. So the difference then between the ERC training and the vital call is, one, the ERC training is from the self-empowered program.
Well, yeah, any ERC training is ERC, right? So it depends, like if it's like there's an elite training today. That's just right. ERC people that have been in multiple years. It's not even the new people in ERC.
Okay.
Right. So we're going to get the languaging all worked out. Vital is being swallowed up into our memberships, and we're going to get real clear and announce it to everybody that this is what this is called and this is what this is called, so that people are real clear what they're getting. ERC gets all the content, but they also get all the individual coaching, the group coaching, the lab test analysis, the, you know, all of that stuff as well. So they get it all applied. Whereas the empowered is, my goal is to get it, make everybody taking care of themselves, be empowered, right? So you don't need doctors except when you fall out of a tree, you know, or you have a raging infection and 104 fever, that you know how to take care of you. And that's why there's so much in there on herbal stuff. And we're going to be announcing probably next month, an herbal therapeutics class that a lot of you got, a lot of you NEPTers that have registered in the last year now, got as a bonus. And it's called Herbal Therapeutics. And we offered it as a bonus for people for investing in a full year of the Empowered. So they had to invest at the $2,000 level. So that's going to be helping people and clients and coaches, right, to look at the common herbs, not to be taking a 4-year certification in herbology, which is a great thing to do. But it's also, there's a lot of herbs there that I'm like, I can't even pronounce, let alone do I use on a regular basis. So I'm going to pick the, 22 to 3 dozen herbs that I do use on a regular basis and teach them from a therapeutic, how do you use this with people? Not just what does it do and how does it affect the heart and does also affect the liver and all that, but also how do you actually use it? And I'm going to do some stuff in the kitchen. Here's, I have it in a powdered extract and I'm going to throw it in here and I'm going to make a gravy with it and blah, blah, blah. So you can actually teach people how to be taking care of themselves. And I want to get back into, from the vital calls we did for a while, and I want to get back into that again, which we started to do like the natural first aid. So, we want to get people, get their gut balanced and all that other stuff. But there's times when you got a bug bite and you need something to help take the swelling down. You have a bad headache and you're working on the root cause, but is there something that can help it, please? That kind of stuff, or blood pressure, right? While you're working on fixing the underlying, helping to get the blood pressure down. So I want to get back into doing some of those trainings on a regular basis too. So long answer to a short question. Sorry, that's just the way I roll.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yes, so take advantage of it. Go in there. It's constantly evolving because I'm always, and in fact, last night I took some things that were buried underneath. I'm like, oh, so I put them on the page. So people are thinking, oh, there's all this new stuff. It's not really new stuff. It just was buried in, underneath and you didn't see it. And you're like, oh, look, there's a thing on fats and inflammation. Let me watch that one. So it gives people that a la carte ability to take it through. And they can go through in an order. We give them a handbook and they can go through it in an order. But we have people in at different levels, right? They've already done the leaky gut repair. They're going to work on whatever. Yeah. Maria, you have another question. Go for it.
Okay. It's quick. So I don't know what to do with this person, but she is a physician and scheduled an appointment with me, my strategy call, whatever. And so yesterday it was a call. And I sent her a reminder, just, they get reminders, whatever, but as 15 minutes, I see you in 15 minutes, send her a text message. I have a schedule. It doesn't say anything else. And it says, okay, let's do it now. So give me the dates and whatever you're available this week and times. And then it took a minute, but I didn't know she was a physician. And she's like, I'm available, blah, 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 blah. And today specifically at 11:30 a.m. or 12:30 my time. And so I got to say, okay, blah, blah, blah. We'll reschedule. I'm available. Fine. And then she kind of says, well, I'm a physician. I've been in the office. I'm sorry. I got with calls, blah, blah, blah. But tomorrow, which is today, I'm available. And then she doesn't show up for the call. I'm said, I'm on Zoom, whatever. If past 15 minutes, I said, look, past 15 minutes, you have a good day. I guess you couldn't show up, whatever I said.
And so this an initial call with her? You said a strategy. You haven't met with her before. She's not already a client paying.
No.
Okay.
So to me, I'm done with her. Yeah. She kind of apologized. She says, sorry, I've been, she said yes, she would be available. She gave me a specific time, and here I am sitting and scheduling stuff around, right?
Right.
And sitting, she's like, I'm so sorry for, wasted your time.
Unless somebody has an emergency, if she's an ER doc and suddenly, she's dealing with a mangled person, or if she's, a surgeon and their surgery goes over or whatever, then I could see that being an issue. Right. But if somebody's going to cancel at the last minute, I want to hear a good reason. So we ask them for a 24-hour, 48-hour actually cancellation, or they're going to be charged for the appointment. right? It's tougher now because she's a new person, right? So she, you're doing a 15 minute strategy call without a charge, right?
That, but you know, to me it's like, shit, if she doesn't, cannot even, first of all, let me know in advance. She only let me know because I kind of send a courtesy type.
Right, right. Then I would say that's a red flag. And you let her know though, like, hey, look, this is, you know, I understand you're a physician. I understand you're busy, but you owe it to me to give that. And I really just want people who I'm working with to be really respectful of my time, right?
Right.
And then you let me know and you text me. If there's an emergency and somebody comes in from an accident and you have to deal with them, I get it, right?
Yeah.
But if it's not something serious like that, it's just that you can owe it to me. I can't make it. I can't get rid of this man. My clients, are they just stuck in three more clients and or patients and I can't make it. That's different. But three times in a row.
Well, yeah, two times in a row. Yeah, within less than 24 hours. I mean,
two times in a row. So the first, I thought it was the first one, the second one, and even the third one.
No,
I give her one more chance and say, look, you know, I need to know in advance if you're not going to make it because I carved out that time for you that I could have been doing something else. And if you're not serious about, you know, getting my help, then that's fine. I want to know that now. And then we'll just part friends or, you know, something nice, but you can't let people do that.
Yeah, I was not going to reply at all. So that's why I'm kind of, you know, for me, it's like you're already screwing me over. You know?
I would let her go. I mean, if she gets back to you, then that's the conversation you have with her.
Yeah, she just got back. Sorry to have, you know, like missed you again, been tied up with work phone calls. I apologize. Sorry to have wasted your time. I think maybe my tone before was like, you know, I've been waiting for 15 minutes, have a good day kind of thing. I was very short, basically saying, hey, you kind of had enough.
Right.
I think
make a decision. It sounds like she doesn't really respect your time.
Exactly. She's already not respecting my time now. I don't think she's going to respect later. So, right. I just wanted to talk it through because for me, it was like, I'm done with her already. It's just, yeah. Cannot do it. Okay, thanks. I just have to talk it out.
Yeah, no worries. Anybody else? You guys, it's like we switched these calls to be on Zoom so I could see everybody because instant teleseminar, it was just all audio. And now everybody turns off their phone, their pictures, so I can't see anybody. Linda says, I have to go on another call. I'd love to understand the breakdown of all. Let me see what that says. Let's see. That was in the chat. Let me go to the chat. Chat. Okay, maybe we have somebody reach out to her. What'd she say? I'd love to understand the breakdown of all your programs. What's the next best step for me? Understanding what I have skills-wise. Yeah, okay, good. I'm going to I'm going to give this information to... give me a second. All right. Anybody else? See, Carol's on. J.A. Who's J.A.?
Dr. Rita Marie, it's Sharon. I have a question.
Sure. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. So I finished level one. I understand level two is not ready to go, but I also understand that there's supposed to be assignments for level one, and I'm not seeing them. So can you help me find them?
I will work on that. I just got word. I think you met with Annette.
Yes.
And she went
correct.
Through it. So yep. I'm going to meet with Annette tomorrow and we're going to figure it out.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. And there should be like throughout like IRSPT, that's module 9. There's a ton of stuff in there. So yeah, I'll work with the team to make sure that all of that stuff gets up.
Well, I understand that you're supposed to turn some things in.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's case studies that you do. and you turn in the case studies.
I didn't see any case studies.
And they should have been merged throughout. I mean, there should be the, I'll get in there and make
sure. Okay, awesome, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And I'm told that level two should be done very shortly. And again, I'm gonna, you know, light some fires to make sure that that happens. All right, who else is here? Anybody else? Questions or comments? Otherwise, we'll call it a job. Kate, yeah.
Okay, this is gonna sound like a really silly question, right?
Right, well, I could use a laugh, so.
Okay, how do you, I mean, I know that you walk your talk totally and you do everything that you teach. And I'm looking at you and I'm go, well, how does she look? Oh, you look like a teenager.
Really?
I mean, we're about the same age. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, I've been so careful and I'm in IRSPT and I'm working with people. And it's like the changes that I want to see happen in me are not happening in the way that I imagine them. Yeah. And then I look at you and I'm like, okay, so I can't run. I have a heel spur. You know, I could barely, I mean, I'm lucky that I can walk. So, and I used to hike, what, 3 miles a day, and I was a dancer, so I can't do that. But really, there has to be something else.
I'm going to throw out the N word. Mindset is huge. And I'm not limited by my age, and I'm not allowing people to tell me that at my age, I shouldn't be doing X, Y, Z.
Well, right.
Mindset is huge. Mindset is huge. I believe in the healing power of my body. I eat pristinely. I really do. I mean, there's nothing that crosses my lips that is not good for me. And there's probably things that don't cross my lips that are good for me, but I've not tested my blood sugar on them. So I'm missing out on some of those things. My sleep, I've gotten better and dedicated to that. So that's something right when I said this, I'm not always so hot about the sleep. My stress pieces, I don't let it get to me. I honestly don't let things get to me. So when something wrong goes on, most of the time, I'm not perfect, I'm not an angel, but most of the time I just go into my heart math space and I assume positive intent. And I figure out, I'm going to figure out how to fix this, right? And that's a biggie. Like this whole COVID thing hasn't gotten me freaked out or anything. I just don't go outside. But it's not because I'm freaked out. It's because I don't want to wear a mask and, you know, do not be able to hug people. And I don't want to do that, but I know it's needed. So I just stay home and I exercise and I meditate. And, you know, so I do all that stuff. It's not my genes. I will tell you that. I've shared my genetics in the calls. They're really bad. They're bad news. I have anxiety genes. I have ADD genes. I have gut, you know, all the FUT2s, mine are all homozygous, meaning that I don't make bifido. I, you know, more prone to microbiome imbalance. So I've got a lot of bad genes. I started this when I was 28 or 29. So I was younger. And I don't like, oh yeah, well, it's a party, so I'm just going to have a little of that. I don't drink ever. I don't do caffeine except for a little bit of cacao mixed in with my 7 mushroom powder and coconut milk powder. So I'm really careful about it, right? And I'm very careful about the exercise, right? Even if I couldn't run, I'd be walking, or I would be doing a bicycle, or, you know, Maria beats me up when I, no, she doesn't beat me up. She just pushes me to, you know, really push beyond. And I'm not as strong as I want to be right now because I'm not doing the weights. I'm only doing it once a week with her. I'm not doing it every day, but I'm buying these various things to keep myself organized so that I can keep that up, because I think it's super important. You know, if we have limitations on one part of the body, and Maria is great. So if you have limitations on any part of your body, have a session with Maria and she'll help you to figure out how to work the rest of those parts. She's a bum shoulder. She doesn't tell a lot of people that. She has a really bum shoulder and she has to be careful about it, but that doesn't change how she exercises and how, you know, fit she is, right? Because she's figured out ways around it, right? And that's the thing. And when we're working with our clients, is who said it? Oh yeah, it's good to have an excuse, right? Right. Oh yeah, the fires were there, but that was an excuse when it was an excuse, but now it's not an excuse. So what do I do differently?
I want it back.
Yeah. Maria, did you have anything to add to that? I thought I heard her. Anyway, that's it. But thank you for the compliment. I appreciate it. So you're not seeing all the little wrinkle lines there and there and, you know, so thanks good lighting.
You know, the only thing I will say is I don't know, Kate, for how long you're doing this, but, you know, like she said, I mean, you cannot compare somebody doing this for 30 plus years versus maybe you doing for 5 or 10, right? It's just...
No, I've been doing it a long time. I might be missing something in my gene testing.
You might be missing something in general. So have you done any, you know, have you done lab testing? Have you worked with a coach to look at, you know what I mean? Like a lot of us, we are coaches, so we don't necessarily work with coaches. And that's the beauty of being in NEPT too, is that you get to come to all the client calls. So, you know, you get to ask, okay, I had this lab test. What does this mean? Et cetera, et cetera. Because there's, you know, it's good to have second opinion. Like when I do something and if Maria's not there to push me, I don't push myself as hard as I will with her there. I'll be going, okay, I'm done. Right. There were a few times today that I would have just said, I'm done. And she goes, that was only 10. You're supposed to be doing 15. Come on, keep going. Right. And I do. And I love it because she knows my limitations. She wouldn't do that to me if she knew I had an injury or a limitation. And anytime I go, oh, that hurt. Stop. Okay. Get the ball. Let's roll, rub it out. Right. We don't want to push our body past, but it's really helps. It helps to work with somebody who can take you and push you beyond your limits. Right. And but what you think your limits are, not, you know, push you beyond the limits here, but help you to actually do it. Right. And we get scared, even just like creating a program, right? You want to get out there. Some people get really scared and afraid to put yourself out there and need a coach to strategize with you, but also to help you to go, okay, you can do this. Let's just do this and let's do it together. So.
And I would like to comment on that, not from the exercise perspective, but really I did, you know, we think sometimes when we're doing everything right, because, you know, we're following this and that protocol and we feel good when we do it, but maybe we are not achieving the goals. But for example, I did Isabel's, I've been wanting to do a liver flush for a long time. So I did Isabel's flush for the first time. And really, I mean, you know, it made me really notice a few things in my body that I was not going to be noticing, you know, I was not going to notice before. So I've been trying, for example, to, you know, I drink a cup of coffee in the morning, right? And I'm like, you know, I've been like, well, because I enjoy it. I grew up in Brazil. That's the first thing you do when you get up, you know, you drink coffee and you drink coffee throughout the day. So, and then, you know, I love fat. That's most of my diet is actually more than 50% is fat. I've been trying to lower that and change a little bit. So to change some of the parameters of my body composition. So I did the thing, you know, the liver flush. And all of a sudden I said, I don't need that caffeine. I mean, I'm fine. You know, I'm like, okay, I'm fine. I'm trading that for the water. Okay, great. What else? Well, I don't need all the fat either. I mean, I'm like, so, you know, and then you see how the body reacts to certain things. So I think sometimes we think we've been doing all those things that is healthy and all that. You know, I end up losing weight that I was not, okay, I don't need to lose weight, you know, whatever. But it's like, it's a healthy weight that I lost too. And also brought me back to certain things I was not doing that I wanted to do. And it's still healthy both ways. And so I don't know. I think we got to keep sometimes pushing and doing different things that will kind of challenge the body, just like in exercise. Some people exercise every day or almost every day. However, they don't push.
Yeah.
It's not going to change. You're definitely not going to change. If you go for that walk, 30 minutes walk, and you keep, you know, the steps and say, I do 3,000 steps, 10,000. You're not going to change unless, you know, you push the body. It's just like us, our minds is the same thing. Right. So I think there's exercise gets a bad rap sometimes. It's not doing what it's supposed to do mentally, physically, and emotionally because people are doing the same thing all the time and they don't bring new things to the body. And as challenge our body physically on movement, we're going to challenge our body mentally and emotionally. And that is proven scientifically, and you're going to feel it. You and I are going to feel it. Yeah. So just a thought, you know, that I would share, but I think we always got to keep pushing for things we haven't done it and try it and not being like, oh, I know you said, you know, I got to be my genes. maybe try to push in different directions a little bit, you know, and pick one thing to push. And then you're going to say, oh, yeah, that was better, that was worse, or whatever. So anyway.
And I totally agree with that. And the from a food perspective, right? We think we're doing the right thing, but we may not be for us. And that's why we created these memberships. We call them labs. And it's all about experiment with this, experiment with that. How do you do on a keto for a week? How do you do on a plant-based low-fat diet? How do you find what's right for you? How do you do with more greens, less greens? I mean, one thing I see all the time, when I drink a green smoothie, it's a jar like this, full of green smoothie, not a lot of water, just a lot of greens. And I watch people make green smoothies. They put the coconut milk in, and then they put the this in, and then they put the that in, and oh, let's add a handful of this and that. And then they had a handful of greens. I'm like, your smoothie doesn't even look green, right? So that I've been doing green smoothies for 35 years, like almost a quart every day. Every now and then I go, oh, I just don't want to do it today, or I didn't make one and I don't have time. But most of the time I'm drinking this every day. So I'm getting all those greens in. Now, if somebody has an oxalate sensitivity, we have to work on that. But and my probiotics, right? I'm every day, it's either sauerkraut or kimchi or coconut yogurt or something with that, because I know with my gut genes that I need to support that. But everybody has to experiment. And that's why we call this thing a lab, because we're giving you experiment with this, experiment with that, try this, try that. And then you come up with what works for you for this season, right? And then you go into winter and you go, oops, that's not going to work for me now. I'm going to shift it to this, right? Yeah. Yeah. Good question, because it just gets off in the discussion if we are.
I really appreciate it. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you all. And thank you, Maria. I'm going to look you up. Tell me how to find you.
BFABBU.
Yeah, I can put the information in the chat.
Yeah. 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 It's great. Thank you. Who else? Anybody else? We have a couple more minutes. I would like to have a little bit of a break after this, so it'll be great. So
I was just going to say, Rio to Marie, that it's been, I just really appreciate all these calls, because even if I come and I don't think I have a question, like today, I actually got a question answered, you know, because as I've been going through digestion and thinking, well, there's all these tests and which one do you start with? And, you know, I think basically start with a stool test. That's a good place to start, you know, because not everybody wants to do all the tests. They really do have to.
Nobody wants to do a stool test. Just saying. Nobody wants to poop in a cup, stir it around, put it in a vial and send it off. It's the least popular test of all.
But don't you think it's the most important one when it comes
to? It depends on the person. I don't usually start with a stool test. I do it later to fine tune, because there's so much. I just listen. Like I listen to what are they saying about their gut? What are they saying about their digestion? Right? What are they saying? And if I'm hearing certain things, I'm like, let's just get you on this, you know, anti-inflammatory gut healing protocol for a month, and let's see if you're still having it. And then we can find out. If you do a test too early, before they've made changes, you've kind of wasted their money. Like I like to actually do things first. And I know there's there's different opinions about it. It just depends on the person that you're dealing with. But so many of our people are very savvy and they've been through a lot. And then I hear it and I go, oh, we're starting with a stool test and we're starting with a whole bunch of tests because you've been doing, like, it seems like everything right. Let's look at the tests. Whereas somebody comes in, like my brother would come in and I'd be like, hell no, I'm not wasting your money on tests here. Do this. Right? I know what your genes look like, at least partially, because I've gotten my own done and you're from the same two people. So there's a lot of similarities going to run in there. You see what I'm saying? But we really have to look at how do we talk to people differently depending on who they are. Yeah.
Okay. So it's really about history taking and knowing where they're coming from and getting them to do actions that are going to facilitate the gut healing. And then do the test to see how we're doing.
Yeah. And that's why I'm doing this 5-day challenge. People are like, I don't know, a 5-day challenge on history taking. Yeah, you do need it. Because it's how do you ask those questions in such a way that you get the information. And I find it, you know, and not being critical, but on some of the NEPT calls where people bring in the case and I'm just saying, oh, what about this? What about that? And they go, oh, I didn't ask that. I want to get to the point where you're so practiced at this that, you know, like, for example, one of the magic questions is, when was the last time you did not have this, whatever chief complaint they're talking about, say headaches. When was the last time you remember that you did not have these regular headaches? And they're like, huh. And then they go, oh, I think it was when I was 17. You know, I think they started when I, oh, great. Okay. Tell me more about what was going on in your life, in your environment, right? What was happening at that time? Oh, it was right after I started going out with my friends on weekends and drinking beer, or, you know what I'm saying? Whatever. But you ask them the questions in such a way that then it makes them recall. They're not going to make the connection between what they were doing or, oh, yeah, that was right when we moved out of our house. We were living in Mississippi and there was a big flood and there was a hurricane and the house got all, you know, flooded and we lived there for a while and, you know, we left or whatever. I'm like, okay, we're thinking maybe mold, right? It was right after we moved into this neighborhood. And this neighborhood, I remember I was a kid and they had these big tower things. Maybe an EMF, you know what I'm saying? But you have to get them to start telling you what was going on. Oh, it was right after my mother died and they sent me to live with my grandmother for a while. And then my grandmother got sick and then they moved me to my aunt and blah, blah, blah. Okay, then we're looking at emotional trauma and you know, being left, what's that word? Abandonment issues. And so it's really knowing how to ask the questions, how to listen so carefully to ask the next question, the next question, the next question. So that when you come on a call with me, you've asked everything that I'm going to ask you to ask. And you can just give me the answers and we can go down that path. And it takes practice. I don't expect anybody to have that skill set after just doing a program and not having, you know, umpteen years. But you learn it every single time. Every time you talk to somebody, you learn a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. Okay?
Thank you.
You're welcome. Stephanie, did you have something? You had some questions on Facebook and now I'm trying to remember. I get all confused with who.
Yeah, I get all these random questions that just like pop in and out. So if there's something, I'll put it on Facebook, but I'm not even sure I remember what I was, asking.
Interesting. Random questions that pop in and out need to be revered, right? Because if you're hearing certain things and you're asking these random questions come out, it means that those little pathways are all like, they're all jiggling around and they're putting together what you learned here, what you learned there, and then out pops the question. And that's what we're doing when we're having these intakes with people, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Good.
Yeah. Okay. So some of the recent random questions, I was just curious what you think, cause I'm doing the pillars right now. And I found the sleep really fascinating because, even though I've been studying sleep before that, there was some extra stuff in there that was new. And one of the things was determining your sleep cycle length. I'd never thought about doing that. And the thing I was wondering is, do you think a good way of testing that would be like on a day that you're really tired and you need like a deep rest, taking a nap and giving yourself parameters where you just let yourself wake up? Would that probably run you through a sleep cycle? Because, you know, like you rarely.
Right. I mean, if it's at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, it's going to throw you off because if you just keep letting yourself sleep, you might sleep till midnight and then you're not going to go back to sleep. But I like the idea of having it be a day you're really tired and just go to bed as soon as you start to feel it, you know, so maybe you do go to bed at 9 or 10 at night and you don't have to get up the next day. It really should be a day you don't have to get up because then you're not setting an alarm and then you get to know what your body's really doing.
I guess I was thinking about napping just because I was thinking if you get say 8 hours of sleep, like even that chart that you have, there are different permutations. It doesn't necessarily tell you for sure what one sleep cycle is. So I've been trying to think, how do you figure out? Cause I think you would need to have one or two sleep cycles only to be able to really get a good idea of how long.
But napping, I think, you know, it depends on how soon before you've done it, but napping tends to be, people just tend towards shorter. Like my son always says, I just go and I lay down, I take a power nap. I'm like, do you set an alarm? He goes, no, I just lay down with the intention that I'm going to sleep, you know, a power nap. And I wake up 20 minutes later. I'm like, okay, I don't think I could do that, but you know, but I think it's variable. So when you look at how long does it take you to fall asleep, and then you look at how long before I wake up and say you wake up 6 hours later, then you, there are variations. So you take off the half hour. So maybe it's 5 hours, 5.5 hours later. So then you go, well, it could be, most likely it's going to be somewhere in the range of an hour and a half. So you look at, okay, woke up naturally. It was a 5.5 hours, an hour and a half. That would be four sleep cycle. Well, four sleep cycle would be six, right? So let's just say it's 4.5. Let's just make it simple. You go, oh, there's three or there's four, but no, it's a little different than that, right? So then you have to look at, maybe it was, if it was 5.5, maybe it was an hour and 15 minutes. What, how was that work out? So you have to use your calculator to do it. But you're not going to know it for sure on one test. That's the thing, yeah. Right? You need to do it a couple of times, a few times.
Because what's hard for me is determining how long it took me to fall asleep, because that varies a lot. So that's why with a nap, a lot of times if I'm really tired, I'm out. And I can be out for a while. So
yeah, we'll try it. I haven't done it yet
to test it out, but I thought it might give me testing it
and seeing if there's a consistent pattern. If you do that several times and you always wake up after 4 hours and, you know, it's right away, you know, oh, it was an hour and whatever that comes out to be, an hour and 15 minutes or whatever. Yeah, I think it's worth trying, right? There's so many ways to slice an apple, you know what I mean? And
right.
We have to find what works for a specific person. Yeah. Yeah, give it a try and let us know how it goes.
Okay. Like it. Another question I had, this is random. A couple times, because I've looked up zinc supplementation, you know, and so I'm hearing that zinc interferes with copper absorption, and that there are combined formulas that have zinc and copper. And I think I read somewhere, and to my mind, you wouldn't want to put the zinc and copper together, would you? Because if they compete for each other,
I don't know that they compete necessarily as they, like a copper deficiency or a copper excess will lead to a zinc deficiency. It's basically the way they biochemically work. So I'd have to review that to see if they actually compete for absorption. And it may be better in things that you think compete for absorption, not to take them together, but to take them at different times of day.
Yeah, I didn't get too detailed into it, but I think there's like a pathway, and the copper, I believe, gets diverted into another pathway in the presence of zinc. And so people who supplement with zinc for long periods of time can develop copper deficiency.
And the opposite happens more commonly, though.
Really?
Somebody look it up in the micronutrients. It's in the micronutrients module, which will be, you're going.
Yeah, that's the thing too. I know a lot of these questions will probably get answered down the road, but I'm just always kind of
You're always thinking, which is really good,
thinking. Which
is
great.
The thing about zinc is that a lot of people have the SNPs that make it difficult for them to absorb it. And a lot of some studies have been done on animals where they show that the zinc deficiency actually gets passed down epigenetically from generation to generation. So if you take a normal, I think it was a rat. I don't remember what the animal was, probably a rat. And they fed this rat a zinc deficient diet while she was pregnant, and then gave birth to this zinc deficient child, right? They measured all these things, but then they supplemented that child rat all the way through her life and then her pregnancy, and her baby was born zinc deficient as well. Right. And it took four generations of rats. Maybe it's only two generations of people, but took four generations of rats before they were able to correct it. Right. So I look at, oh, my mom was smoking cigarettes and eating garbage. And right. How long is it going to take for me to correct that zinc deficiency? Right.
Yeah.
It's interesting. All right, guys. Well, if there's no more questions, then we'll talk to you guys again soon, and next month for those in INE, and then, and you know, probably next week for those of you in NEPT, because we generally have calls pretty much every week. All right. Have a good one, guys.